Hey, New Heights, welcome to church. Wherever you are gathered, we're excited to worship, to fellowship, and to discuss the word together. The church isn't the place where we are, but it's us, the body, joining together. So now, let's jump into this week's sermon.
Hey, New Heights Church. Hope all is going well this Wednesday. Oh, hey, look at this.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going, Will?
That's going good.
I was just back there helping Baker with some
stuff.
Yeah,
he struggles a little bit.
Yeah, he needs my help sometimes.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so we're looking at the final sermon in Leviticus.
Yeah.
We've made it.
Yeah.
Whew. So chapter 27. I'm going to go ahead.
How dead is your phone?
Oh, it's not dead. I mean, it's a lie. I just have to turn it on.
Yeah.
There we go.
Let's share this.
Yeah.
Hey, before we jump into the text, church, please take a minute to share the video, and we want to interact with you. So if you can take a second to comment, maybe share some of your takeaways from Leviticus. We're going to start with chapter 27, but we'll give an entire overview of the entire book of Leviticus. So any thoughts or further questions you may have from Leviticus, we want to deal with those as well. And
absolutely.
So, yeah, take it away.
Okay, here we go. Chapter 27. The Lord spoke to Moses, "Speak to the Israelites and tell them, when someone makes a special vow to the Lord that involves the assessment of people, if the assessment concerns a male from 20 to 60 years old, your assessment is 50 silver shekels, measured by the standard sanctuary shekel. If the person is a female, your assessment is 30 shekels. If the person is from 5 to 20 years old, your assessment for a male is 20 shekels. For a female, 10 shekels. If the person is from 1 month to 5 years old, your assessment for a male is 5 silver shekels. And for a female, your assessment is 3 shekels of silver. If the person is 60 years old or more, your assessment is 15 shekels. For a male, 10 shekels for a female. But if one is too poor to pay the assessment, he must present the person before the priest, and the priest will set a value for him. The priest will set a value for him according to what the one making the vow can afford." I'm going to kick it over to you, man.
Okay. If the vow is an animal that may be offered as an offering to the Lord, all of it that he gives to the Lord is holy. He shall not exchange it or make a substitute for it. Good for bad or bad for good, and if he does in fact substitute one animal for another, then both it and the substitute shall be holy. And if it's an unclean animal that may not be offered as an offering to the Lord, then it shall stand the animal before the priest, and the priest shall value it as either good or bad. As the priest values it, so it shall be. But if he wishes to redeem it, he shall add a fifth to the valuation. And when a man dedicates his house as a holy gift to the Lord, the priest shall value it as either good or bad. As the priest values it, so it shall stand. And if the donor wishes to redeem his house, he shall add a fifth to the valuation price, and it shall be his. And if a man dedicates to the Lord part of the land that is his possession, then the valuation shall be in proportion to his seed. A omer of barley seed shall be valued at 50 shekels of silver. If he dedicates his field from the year of Jubilee, the valuation shall stand. But if he dedicates his field after Jubilee, then the priest shall calculate the price according to the years that remain until the year of Jubilee. And a deduction shall be made from the valuation. And if he who dedicates the field wishes to redeem it, then he shall add a fifth to its valuation price, and it shall remain his. If he does not wish to redeem the field, or if he has sold the field to another man, it shall not be redeemed anymore. But the field, when it is released in Jubilee, shall be a holy gift to the Lord, like a field that has been devoted. The priest shall be in possession of it. If he dedicates to the Lord a field that he has bought, which is not part of his possession, then the priest shall calculate the amount of the valuation for it up to the year of Jubilee, and the man shall give the valuation on that day as a holy gift to the Lord in the year of Jubilee. The field shall return to him whom it was bought, to whom the land belongs as a possession. Listen, Jeremy. Every valuation shall be according to the shekel of the sanctuary. 20 gerahs shall make a shekel.
I didn't know that you were going to take it all. I thought you were going to kick it back over at some point. So I was like, wait.
No, I'm very passionate about this,
the shekels.
this topic. So I wanted to read it all. It's important to me.
All right. So this is, if you were able to stay tuned to all of that, this is a weird chapter to end on. Ooh. Yeah. Travis Hatfield said this has been brought to you by Dr. Pepper Cream Soda. Really
good. Tithes and offerings have been down at New Heights. And so we've kind of just marketed ourselves out to various companies, and Dr. Pepper has graciously sponsored us. Yeah.
Yep, I thought this had something, but no, I have to remove the logo.
Yeah, that's it. It's just Nike and Dr. Pepper.
Yeah. Yes, okay, it doesn't seem like there's a lot here. So, like, I called you earlier, And we were kind of talking about this chapter, and it was like, you read this and you think, well, what is this talking about? It's talking about assessing people, like putting values on people.
Yeah. What's hilarious is we referenced a couple of different commentaries, and several commentaries just skip it.
Yeah, don't talk about it.
There's no insight given. Everything is just skipped. And so it is a difficult chapter. I think Matthew Henry had the best view on this. I wanted to share with you what...
Well, tell me. What did Matthew Henry think?
Matthew Henry, in his commentary on Leviticus, he went into about how this vow represented a dedication of service to the Lord. Now, what confuses us is the shekels are added in, right? So we're not really sure what's going on with the shekels. But the shekels have to do with redemption. So if someone was going to make a vow to the Lord or dedicate themselves to service to the Lord that was not a Levite, that was not already in the royal priesthood, the holy priesthood of God, then they could come and they could actually dedicate themselves, their lives, to the service of God in the worship and the sacrifices and the temples and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, they couldn't do everything a priest could do, but they could you know, take care of animals that are going to be offered. They could sweep, they could clean, you know, do these things. And so if someone wanted to do that, they could do that. Now, the reason for the placement of it is twofold. Number one, it's kind of an appendix, right? It's just like these weird laws. You see like bank terms, like there's amortization of calculating the years to Jubilee.
You see the word Homer?
Yeah, that like Simpson. Yeah, that's in there too. So it's kind of an appendix, but Henry points out this interesting thing, that it comes after the covenant because people were going to be prone to over-dedicate themselves to the Lord out of fear for coming judgment. Not out of a righteous dedication, but just as a desperation type of thing. When famines hit the land and things like that, that they would start to do that. So they put these high prices on all these people. The Lord does this to actually discourage this kind of dedication, at least a flippant dedication. Yeah. He would allow it, but he didn't want it to be done flippantly. And some of these were up to four years of salary. If you had dedicated yourself to temple service and then wanted to kind of retire from that, you would have to pay these amounts to get out of that contract.
Okay. So just to make sure we're all clear.
Yeah.
When we read this,
yeah.
If I wanted to dedicate my son,
yeah,
right? I bring him and they would look over him. I would have to pay for his blessing, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then he took on some duties, some priestly duties, though he wasn't a priest.
Well, you wouldn't have to pay unless you were keeping him in your home.
Gotcha. Okay.
But we actually have an example of this in the Bible.
We do?
Yeah. So Hannah is a mother in Scripture who wants a son and prays and asks the Lord for a son. And Samuel is born to Hannah. Now, there's no record in 1 Samuel of her paying anything to the priest. Rather, she just gives her son into the temple service, and then he is raised by the priest. And so it's a little bit of strange practice. You also have to remember it's a different culture, a completely foreign culture than what we're used to.
Yeah. I mean, that's yeah. So just in case anyone's curious, when you see the measurement called a homer,
yeah,
that's about, it's somewhat grains, but 300 pounds of grain. Or, for our European friends, 135 kilos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I measure things. So the first part of that we read is about people, and then the second part is about animals, animals that would be redeemed either for food or for some kind of service within the priesthood. And then the third is the property. And so property could also be dedicated to the Lord if you wanted to give a house or give land to the priests. And that could be used for the Lord's purposes, to raise food for the poor, different things like that. Basically ministry purposes.
So this is like it's a form of worship in that I am dedicating things to the Lord. I'm giving up things. But on a practical note, was it there to also kind of help the priests and their provisions and whatnot?
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was an aid to keep the priests employed so that they had money and food so that they could continue to work on behalf of God as priests of God for the full extent of their lives.
So what you're saying is during our baby dedications, if people want to take their babies back, we should charge.
Yeah. Like when we're dedicating a child to the Lord, you hand your child over to the pastor. You got to add 20%. Like,
yeah.
If you want us to give your child back. Like,
all right, okay, but all seriousness.
No, Jeremy, we're not priests. Remember,
right,
we're pastors.
Right. That's right. So, but you know, it is interesting because when I know I've done this when I've talked about child dedications,
mm-hmm.
I've brought up Hannah,
Yeah, and it puts a whole new meaning on
it.
That.
Really does, right? Story. It's like, so when you look at the law, so where do we get the idea? Is this where we get child dedication from? Because it's not something you see a whole lot in the New Testament, if at all.
Yeah, I think this is the beginnings of it. I think it's more of a it's birthed more out of Hannah's story.
Yeah.
But this is the beginnings of it, and so the idea would be that a parent would say that they feel that they wanted to make sure that one of their children was dedicating their life to serving the Lord. Samson is an example of this, like taking the Nazirite vows, where he would not touch any dead animals or dead people. He would not drink wine. He would not cut his hair. Like, they made those vows for him because they felt very strongly that he would be used greatly by God, which he, if you know biblical history, he was.
Yeah.
So I want to read verses 26 and 27. It says, "A firstborn of animals, which as a firstborn belongs to the Lord, no man may dedicate, whether ox or sheep, it is the Lord's. And if it is an unclean animal, then he shall buy it back at the valuation and add a fifth to it, or 20%. Or if it is not redeemed, it shall be sold at the valuation." Those two verses are just kind of a footnote, and they're added in there because it was... The law needed to be clear that the firstborn already belonged to God, and so I think that's an important thing, that they were obligated to give something to God.
Yeah.
But then everything else was kind of a free will offering. So what you see in Scripture, not just here, but in other places in Leviticus and elsewhere in the Bible, is there's lots of opportunities to worship above and beyond what's expected, and that's actually a calling on God's people, is that we don't just do the bare minimum. We don't live kind of like bottom of the barrel, but we actually live in a way that's generous, and we go above and beyond. And so I thought that was interesting too.
So we might have some. They can hear us, but they said it's a little bit low.
Okay.
So if I move this microphone forward,
that will do nothing. Let's ask Baker for help.
Yeah.
Baker, help. You want me to help you? Baker?
Baker's back there. He's throwing up his hands. He doesn't know what he's frustrated. Okay. So there we go. We just got to get close. Okay. That might help. Here, I'll squeeze in a little bit.
We were trying to socially distance.
Yeah, we were. Okay. Maybe, hopefully that helps with the sound a little bit. So this is why we didn't do this on Sunday mornings like this.
Well, and on your phone, you can turn the volume up too.
That's, maybe, that's
that might,
true.
That might be part of it.
Bring it closer to your ear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's chapter 27. The last section, chapters or verses 28 through 34, just kind of cover the idea that once something was dedicated to God, it was His. And so they weren't allowed to like dedicate land to the Lord, and then the priests take possession of it, and then they go and sell crops off of it or do whatever they wanted with it. And so there's an idea there that, if you dedicate something to the Lord, you need to stick with it. And so...
it's funny because there's a beautiful application in that, because when you look back at, especially in the New Testament, when we see that we've been bought, right, that our lives really are to be this living worship, this completely dedicated. So when we look at the things that are being dedicated to the Lord, whether it's family, whether it's... housing? All possessions,
land,
in essence, So it's especially given the time frame we're going into with home church, it's kind of a neat reminder, right, that we're going to dedicate our homes to the Lord, not only for family worship, for people to come in and hear the gospel and be encouraged by it.
Right. Yeah, and I think the greatest application of chapter 27 is that all of our stuff is for God. It's for His glory and for His kingdom. And so, I think house church is a great example. We're gonna leverage our homes. My small group is meeting in my yard, so leverage my yard and lawn chairs and whatever. Like, we're gonna leverage that so that people can be discipled and hear the gospel. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any other thoughts on 27?
No. So I think it was a weird chapter, but I think it was a neat thing at the end of the chapter to say, listen, to dedicate. Even when you don't have to, encourage these voluntary dedications to things. You see a lot of terms of the free will offering in this. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just a good reminder going into the season. A good reminder for the New Testament church.
Yeah. It definitely is an appendix to the book.
Yeah.
Some people think that it was actually added later. I personally don't believe that, but I do think that it was Moses and the Lord inspired it, but Moses kind of put it at the end as this appendix, because it's got a lot of that bank terminology and stuff, so kind of the nuts and bolts of some of the law.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So let's jump into a review of Leviticus. We jump into review, I would love for you guys to drop in the comments maybe your favorite chapter. If you got a Bible, go ahead and open it up and kind of maybe flip through the pages as you're watching. And we're going to go back through all the chapters. Maybe let us know your favorite chapters, maybe the weirdest chapters, maybe most uncomfortable moments from Leviticus, or maybe some things that you absolutely loved from the series. First of all, before we start our review, do you know of any churches that have gone through Leviticus?
No.
I don't either.
No. I was
kind of uncharted waters.
I was told that Leviticus, though, was a ministry killer. And I don't think that's been the case. I think people have been encouraged by Leviticus.
I have talked to a lot of you who have been very encouraged. We have stopped gathering on Sunday mornings.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that has anything to do with Leviticus or not. But we're getting ready to start back up, just in a lot smaller groups. But I think overall, I've learned probably more during this sermon series than I have in any other series that we've preached at New Heights. It was just a lot of stuff that I didn't know before. It really challenged me as a pastor and a preacher to really dive in deeply to the Word of God. Yeah. And I think I read more. I definitely studied more for these sermons. I put more time into these sermons because when I would read it, I'd just be like, man, I don't know. I mean, you read a passage in John, you kind of know where you're going to go with preaching it, but you read a passage in Leviticus about menstruation, for example, you're like, I don't know. What do
don't
I do?
Know. No, so I think it definitely gave me a better appreciation, and maybe I realized how often Leviticus is quoted in the New Testament.
That's a good point.
It is dealt with so much in the New Testament, I never even realized it, that it is heavily leaned about, which should make sense, right? It's the law.
Yeah.
And so to think how much it's referenced back, and maybe I have a better appreciation maybe for where some of those New Testament commentators were going.
So let's review the first seven chapters.
Yeah.
The first seven chapters of Leviticus we did, I think, in six Sundays. So we preached this in six sermons. There's basically five offerings that are at the beginning of Leviticus. You have a burnt offering, grain offering, peace offering, sin offering, and guilt offering. What are some of the things you learned as we preached through those, Jeremy?
I think probably the biggest was how some of those details and how each offering was to raise your eyes to Christ, or a different aspect of it, right? A different aspect of the atonement. And I think that, the peace offering, I didn't actually preach that one out of all the offerings. That was the one I didn't preach. So kind of going back
into the I thought that one was the most fun, actually.
Yeah.
Of the five offerings, that one was cool.
Well, I thought each one brought a different... kind of a different angle to the person of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really neat and interesting. That some of it, obviously, a lot of it dealt with sin, but that one dealt with fellowship.
Right.
And so I think so many different aspects.
Grain offering dealt with worship.
Yeah.
There's no sin involved in the grain offering. It was just a free will offering in the same way which we give money, not grain, but it was kind of their way of giving of their sustenance to the Lord.
And I think all the symbolism, even like how frankincense wasn't allowed in some of these, but some of these it was. Like in the peace offering, there's frankincense. And some of them, because where frankincense represented joy, that was not allowed with offerings that dealt with like sin and death. And so I don't know, I think all that stuff was kind of interesting.
The bread was interesting. Unleavened and leavened different times.
Yes.
All right, so figuring out that you could get drunk from bread and all the science behind that.
That's right. What'd you call it? The
boozy bread.
The boozy bread.
Yeah.
So here's something I thought was interesting. I'm going through Genesis with a couple of guys.
Yeah.
And what stuck out to me, especially with Cain and Abel, I think it's the first time you see it. You see the fat of the animal. You see this Levitical language in Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think even you see it all the way back then before everything is given. You see this type of offering that is, again, in the beginning. And I guess there's a larger appreciation for maybe what the Lord has constantly, this unfolding of what the Lord's kind of been showing his people. I don't know. I think the offerings were really insightful.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked them. And I think that's where kind of we had the foundation of unfinished business. There's this constant offering up of sacrifice.
Right. We got someone who said that
Oh, okay, so Travis Hatfield said his favorite thing, or something he thought was interesting. He didn't say it was his favorite, that Panera Bread was a bar.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, I'm going to print t-shirts that say Panera is a bar. Yeah. Change my mind.
You know? Yeah. Panera, was it Panera Bread where everyone knows your name?
Yes, like, yeah. Yes.
Michael says that there's a lot of food laws that were strange. I think that may, okay, I know maybe you're going to go here in a minute. That may be one, it's not my favorite, but it's one of my favorite moments in Leviticus, that where Peter is, the food laws are revealed to Peter, because we see a lot of weird food laws, and the purpose of them was to say, it was to represent the Gentiles, mm-hmm. and we see that in Acts 10 with right. Peter, and I think that's one of the coolest things I've seen in Leviticus.
Coolest takeaway, one of the coolest yeah. takeaways for sure.
It's not my top one.
Well, is the food chapter 11? Yes. So all the dietary laws are in chapter 11. That was cool because we got to, in preaching that, not just look at Levitical dietary laws, but look at why food is important to God.
Yeah.
And we talked a lot about just eating to God's glory. So mm-hmm. that was a fun sermon.
Yeah.
The next kind of section of the book was chapters 8 through 10, which really dealt with the priesthood. And so in these three chapters, you have the ordination of the priest, kind of the requirements of the priest, what was going to be asked of the priest. And then this is when you also have the beginning of worship too. This is where you have a couple of deaths for just not following God's law and things like that. So big takeaways from the priesthood section.
Man, that feels like eternity ago.
It was a long time ago. Yeah, it was a long time ago. So
I don't remember. I don't know.
I think my biggest takeaway was studying all the foreshadowing of the priest, yeah, the okay. priestly language, to two things. Number one, Jesus' fulfillment of the priesthood, in that he is the high priest. But secondly, how that all believers in the new covenant are yeah. made to be priests. And so there was kind of like this exclusivity on the Levites, right?
Yeah.
And you even have in chapter 27, that's what we dealt with tonight, is that, you know, you had to, if you wanted to serve in the temple, but you weren't by birth a Levite, there was a lot of stuff you had to go through. But in the new covenant, that's all lifted. You know, the dietary laws are lifted. And so it's all inclusive now, and anyone can be a priest in this heavenly kingdom. And so we're kind of all brought into that.
So the ordination process for the priests, and I think maybe even to the garb, and I know this comes a little bit later, actually. But
oil?
The oil, you know, yeah. who they were allowed to marry, not marry. So much of the priests' lives was so controlled because they really were representing those people who were to be in God's presence.
Yeah.
And like you said, the idea that we're a nation of priests, that you know that God has made us all priests, really is kind of a indicator of what he expects.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and then the next section, we kind of broke it down into three sections. It was the sacrifices, the priesthood, and then the laws.
So someone made a comment that the menstruation sermon was weird.
That's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
Who said it was weird?
Michael.
Oh.
Yeah, he said it was weird.
That's just because he's a man. But he's just mansplaining.
That was Sabrina. That's
oh, okay.
It. That's Sabrina. It. And right. she said that it was a good job having Pastor Jeremy preach about it. Thanks.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't know why.
menstruation insight.
I don't know what they thought you would have said.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
So that was that the first sermon we did in quarantine?
Yes, it was.
Because it was about quarantine.
Yes.
Yeah, that was timely.
Yeah, that was the very first one because it dealt with isolation during menstruation and then any type of like leprosy and things
semen.
Like that.
Semen, that.
Yes, yeah, dealt with all of that weird stuff. Yeah, so that was our first week in quarantine. So some people were watching online, and then we were doing some stuff in house church. So like yeah. I had service that Sunday in my house, and you know I've got all these ladies in my house, and I'm you know, it's weird when it's in a smaller group.
Oh, dude, I sat in a couple rooms over, and I'm talking to a group of about seven, and I'm talking about semen and menstruation, and someone mentioned the oozing sores. So right, like that was a little odd.
Right.
But I think she mentions, Sabrina mentioned the customs are weird, and I think they are, right? They're weird, but everything was supposed to lift their eyes higher to Christ. Like everything had a spiritual component to it. Everything.
But you know, I think one of the coolest truths learned in all of Leviticus that I didn't know before.
What's that, Will?
The reason for menstruation. That it wasn't just women who were menstruating, but it was any blood. There was no blood allowed in the temple of God or the tabernacle mm-hmm. or the place of worship. There was no blood allowed except for the blood of a sacrifice. And so like that truth hit me. Like, when I was studying this, yeah. I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to preach this. And then when that light bulb, like, turned on, yeah. I was like, man, we only come by the blood of a perfect sacrifice.
Yeah.
And you know, you remember we tied that to even communion.
Yeah.
That we sing about blood, we drink blood, we profess forgiveness through blood, but it's never our own blood.
We talked about the virgin birth that Sunday, because we're even blood, it's also semen, so there's no hope in the seed of man.
Right.
You know, because there were you're talking about some weird practices. Some of the Canaanites and the Phoenicians during the time, weird practices. They consumed a lot of things that
They make Leviticus just look like a walk in the park.
Oh my gosh, it's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah. So moving on from all that, which was insightful and helpful, then we got to the Day of Atonement and the teaching in chapter 17, which was about the life that's found in the blood.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like as people of ancient times would have read Leviticus, they would have had all those same questions, right? But then it was just right in keeping Day of Atonement and the importance of blood right after that. Yeah. So obviously that's pointing to Christ.
Real quick, we have someone watching from Louisiana.
Oh, thanks for tuning in.
Yeah.
Down on the bayou.
Sue.
There. Hey, Sue
Metzger.
Yeah. Thank you for tuning in. And then dealt with some more practical stuff in chapters 18 and 19. Had a sermon on sex.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I like that one.
We heard that on a Wednesday night, didn't we? I think we did. I think we did.
Yeah. Because it was, because it talked about, I think it's about incest and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was super weird and inappropriate for children.
It was inappropriate for children. Children's church that week was something completely different, right?
But it didn't go along with the sermon.
No, it didn't. I thought it was a good sermon. So some of them, I like the weird stuff because...
I know you do.
I do. I really like the weird sermons.
Quote Jeremy on that.
I like the weird stuff. Just make a shirt, my face. No, but it's true. I think it adds, because I think most people are, John 3:16 is a wonderful verse, but people have heard it exposited a million times.
Right.
I think expositing equally inspired scripture about sex is something that isn't done often.
Yeah, God's glory in sex.
Yeah.
And how the scriptures speak to that. Another weird one, sort of weird, was issue of child sacrifice and family, chapter 20.
Yeah, it's not a good thing.
So we dealt with that. We correlated that and applied that to the issue of abortion in modern times.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 19 was actually our Easter text. That on Easter Sunday we went through chapter 19, the two Sundays around Holy Week, and with how to relate to our neighbors.
Hey, Will, I got a question for you.
Okay.
How can
this is always
a little
exciting.
Nervous. Okay.
When you use my name.
How come? Wait. Let's try that again. Hey, Will, I got a question for you.
Okay.
Hey, why don't we stop our sermon series and do like a typical Easter message? Like, why didn't we talk about something in the Gospels? Why talk about neighbors?
Well, because we love expository preaching, and so we go verse by verse through the Bible, and we believe that the Gospel is just clear in every part of the Bible. I think Leviticus demonstrates this perfectly, right? When you're talking about menstruation, there's implications and applications for the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, which is the Gospel. And so we believe every part of the Bible has the Gospel built into the core of it.
Yeah.
And so because of that, we just let the Bible kind of build our calendar for us.
And we talked about how often people come to an Easter service, or in this case, tune into an Easter service.
I hear the same sermon every year.
Same thing, right? Yeah. And so, tune in and hear something in Leviticus.
Yeah. So moving on, chapters 21 and 22 dealt with the priest's holiness. And then right offerings. That was kind of an echo, kind of more like from the beginning of Leviticus, but actually putting it into practice after all the law was given. Chapter 23 dealt with the feasts.
Oh, I like the feasts.
I like the feasts too.
They were fun.
Dealing with all the festivals and feasts that they observed on their annual calendar.
To think how the feasts corresponded with Jesus.
Oh my gosh,
was amazing. If I had to make a bet, I think that's your favorite one.
Well, we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's my bet.
Don't jump the gun,
okay.
But we'll see.
Not jumping.
Chapter 24 dealt with the tabernacle furniture.
Okay, so
that didn't sound exciting
at
first.
No. Okay, so I really like this one. This is the menorah. This is the... Okay, shoebread. Did you ever figure this out?
It's showbread.
It's shoe bread.
No, you're reading it from the King James.
I don't have a King James.
Yes, you do.
I'm ESV only.
This is HCSB. You're not ESV only. That's not ESV.
You outed me.
I don't know what you're reading from. Sometimes when Jeremy sends his sermon outlines in, he's like, it's just random Bible translations.
It's all over the place.
Yes. Yeah. So you got to be careful. But yeah, the Old English spelling had an E, but it's showbread. It's the bread of it was on a table to show
pajamas,
the presence
pajamas.
Of God.
Shoe show.
Whatever.
But yeah, I really like
Thanks
that
for
one.
Tuning
that
in cool. to our Facebook shoe tonight. That was a good one.
That
dealt with Lex Talionis too, that just the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth.
I like the video. Like how we had videos.
Yeah. So you were really excited.
I was. We took a long time setting all that up.
Yeah, Jeremy and I actually built that tabernacle.
The pipe and drape.
Yeah, we used this, and we built the tabernacle out in the field in Lincoln County and filmed that. And so, yeah, it was a lot of work. I'm really glad everybody seemed to enjoy the, you know, the 60 seconds of film that we used from that. And then chapter 25 dealt with the Sabbath years, that they were to give rest to the land. And they were to observe a free.
Oh, you like that one.
And jubilee.
You like that one.
There was a lot of prophecy in that one.
You like the word jubilee.
I like jubilee.
So okay,
it's
so
exciting.
Okay, you come out of a different background than I do. You know, as
this
far
is true.
As okay,
yeah.
Free Will Baptist.
Yeah.
I come from Episcopal. Where they don't do much.
Which is like blank slate.
it's blank. There wasn't much there. So every once in a while, I hear a church doing like, "Hey, we're gonna have a jubilee service."
Yeah.
So this chain, like, they're not giving land back to people.
No, they're
what are they doing?
They're letting their slaves go. That's what they're doing.
Okay, so that was, if you listen to the Jubilee service, that's what they were supposed to do. Give land back, let slaves go.
They were returning all land that had been kind of sold to keep people alive because they didn't have any other options. Like, if they went into, essentially, bankruptcy. This was a year of great forgiveness. So they'd give land back, they would let any captives go free. It's a great principle.
So what's the Jubilee service that we see a lot of churches do?
I don't know.
Okay.
There's a song that we used to sing at our church called Jubilee, and I don't really know the meaning of it. I don't think it had anything to do with the Levitical Jubilee.
Okay.
It was just like happiness, I think.
Gotcha.
It's like Jubilee. It just meant like, oh, they're going to be happy.
Maybe.
The joy of letting everybody go.
Well, maybe Jubilee, since it represented a time of redemption, that's what it had to do with.
Yeah, Jubilee.
Yeah.
Yeah, that we're set free. Yeah, there's a you could make a correlation there. And then chapter 26, we dealt with this past Sunday, the covenant, you know, the blessings for obedience and the punishments, of course, for disobedience. Mm. Kind of a good ending to Leviticus and then the weird ending of chapter 27 that we dealt with at the beginning
of
the live feed tonight. So that is Leviticus overview. And I wanted to just ask a couple of questions. First of all, we were going to ask, we don't know what our favorites are, but we wanted to ask one another, favorite sermons from the book of Leviticus.
Okay.
You want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first.
Okay.
Okay.
I think I know what yours is.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
All right. You want to make a prediction?
Yeah. You want to count to three and say it?
I mean, it's not one word.
Well,
I'll...
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll see.
Okay. I'm ready. Okay.
Do you remember what chapter number?
No, but I'm going to say the word that sticks out.
Okay.
Okay.
One, two, three.
Goat.
Tabernacle. Oh, my gosh.
The goat.
I was going to go with the tabernacle furniture. You really like the menorah.
That was number two. That
number two. Okay. All right.
So
that was close.
My top three, that would
the goat?
Be number two.
Oh, you're talking about the scapegoat. That went into the wilderness.
Or what Michael Scott would call the scapegoat. Yeah.
The escape goat.
Yeah. I think all of that. I think the reason why
I just love that we didn't we use
yeah, we
an
did.
Office clip in that sermon.
Yeah. I think the reason why I liked it so much was so Josh Robinson, who I think is watching right now.
Hey Josh.
Hey Josh. We talked a lot about this and a lot of different theory. I think because we talked a lot of different theories on like is there a demon out there, this goat demon, and I think all the theory and all the stuff surrounding it really intrigued me.
Yeah.
It was also, by the way, the hardest to preach.
Really?
Because there was so much information, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, how do I explain this in a way that's interesting, that doesn't lose people?
Right.
And so I think that's why.
Yeah.
Baker probably, I probably took a million takes with that one. I mean, I was very angry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
My kids learn new words.
Oh, wow. I'm going to do that.
Okay. Well, okay, for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, can you? I want to remember some of the ones we talked about.
I got the review here.
Okay. Okay. I think. Okay. I think I know which one. What's the? Oh, yeah. Okay. I know which one. I'm gonna go with.
All right. Okay. One, two, three.
Feasts.
The feast of their annual calendar, mm-hmm. And how that is fulfilled in Christ was my favorite part of Leviticus. You look at the Feast of Booths. You look at the Feast of Trumpets and the Annunciation of that, the proclamation of that, just the Day of Atonement and the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. Mm-hmm. Jesus fulfills all of it. Yeah. There were seven that we looked at, and every single one of them has its fulfillment in Christ, or ultimately will have its fulfillment in Christ when Jesus comes back. And so just incredible imagery that I think a lot of times we just fly through, mm-hmm. What God was doing over this, you know, like 2,000-year span. What God was doing was actually teaching his people about the coming Messiah.
So what we got out of this is that I know you better than you know me.
Well, I got your number two, and I was close.
Well, I got
your
number one.
I bought you dinner, by the way, and I knew. Did you eat your dinner? You didn't eat it yet, did you?
No. I mean,
but I got you like something you could eat. I know your dietary plans.
You got me a nice drink here.
Yeah,
you know what I eat.
My most difficult to prepare and preach. You have a guess on that one?
Think. I'm gonna say.
I'll give you a hint if you want. You need a lifeline.
No, I don't need a lifeline. I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna say the Sabbath year one.
Yep, that was it.
There you go.
You know how many times I called you?
Like, when did I hear you? When did I get the most phone calls from you? That one was tough.
Because it deals with like what's going to happen to the people.
Yeah.
And so we were trying to look at the fulfillment of that. And at one point, my wife walked into my office at home. And I had like these commentaries across the desk, mm-hmm. and my Bible software pulled up and Bible open and everything. And then I also had a calculator there. And I was like, you know, Bible study's getting deep. Sermon prep is difficult when you got a calculator there going through historical stuff.
You know what? I'll take mine back. I take mine back. The hardest one to preach. Yeah. The Jubilee one.
That's the same one.
Yeah. The one with the freeing the slaves.
Yeah.
Well, I dealt with the...
Yeah, Confession Church, we really struggled with that sermon.
It was hard. It was really hard because of the slavery aspect.
Yep.
That's what I'm remembering.
There's slavery, there's property, there's prophecy. I mean, there's just a lot of really difficult things in there.
There is.
So.
Yeah, I struggled. I think I struggled with the ethical part of slavery because I was going back to Exodus 21,
mm-hmm.
and trying to understand the law as it pertained to slaves. And trying to have to preach and explain that,
mm-hmm.
it was really difficult. It was one of those ones. I'm like, man, I'm happy it was on a Wednesday.
Yeah, for sure. So why don't you? Do we have any more comments? I was going to start wrapping this up. I just had one thought I was going to share with people that are watching real quick, just about preaching at our church. One thing that we love to emphasize at our church is that. Is that we want to emphasize the message over the messenger. And so I think one of the greatest things about our church is that it's not just me prepping a sermon every week. It's not just Jeremy. It's not just other guys in our church. Yep. But there's always collaboration. And so almost any time you hear anyone preach, whether it's one of the pastors or an intern or whoever, almost any time at our church you hear anyone preach, there will be some level of collaboration behind that sermon. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And I don't know if I'm speaking for you. I think you would agree. It is one of my favorite things about our church is that none of us really go into the pulpit alone.
No.
And that kind of keeps us from just like really screwing up some of these tough things. Like,
yeah, so I think it's one of the I think everyone, both you and I have prepared sermons and preached them alone without getting feedback from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the first times I was part of sermon prep as a group, man, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, because there's always that doubt. Like, if I'm preparing something by myself, to be like, man, I hope I'm not alone in history on this. Like, I mean, I'm expositing this right. well. And so right. having other eyes and ears to be able to kind of lean in and give some insights is always awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot of great preachers at our church, and I'm super thankful for them. We had this summer we had planned to let a lot of our guys loose to preach, and we're still going to do that. And so we're going to go through the book of Daniel, and the guy, we've done a lot of the sermon prep already, and just studying Daniel, the book of Daniel. So we're kind of taking from Leviticus 26, where God says he'll exile his people, and then we're jumping into the exile and looking at that through Daniel's life. And the sermon prep for that, the ones that we're preaching, as well as the ones that we're just studying with our other guys, has been interesting, and it's been exciting to jump in with other preachers in our church. So I'm excited for that.
Me too.
Yeah. Anything else that we need to address in the comments, or
are
we ready to say goodnight?
I think they said, someone mentioned it was sweet of you to buy my dinner and drink. So I want to say thank you, Will. That was sweet of you.
That was sweet. He's going to pay me back.
He has sent me the receipt, so it's not that sweet. And also, he didn't get what I asked for, so there was that.
Well, no, listen.
No, it's fine.
So,
we got to go.
We're going to stay alive until we get this settled. So I texted him, and I said, what do you want from Wendy's? I was thinking, okay, maybe he wants... some chicken nuggets or...
Nope, can't eat chicken nuggets.
I know that. I'm just kidding. I was using a hypothetical.
Sure.
I knew what he wanted, chili. So he loves Wendy's chili. So I was like, I'm going to see if he wants it. I'm not just going to take it. So I text him, hey, what do you want from Wendy's? And so I'm planning on getting you a chili.
Yeah.
And then he sends me back like dinner for his whole family. I'm like, dang, that's pretty forward of you.
Two Happy Meals.
Yeah.
That's two Happy Meals.
First of all, Wendy's doesn't sell Happy Meals.
I'm really bad about that. I'm like, I would like to get a Happy Meal and get a supersize. I use McDonald's language.
Yeah, so he sent me this big list of food, and I'm like, okay, that's no problem. But he also said, let me know how much it is. So I did that.
Okay.
I told you how much it was.
Right. So let me tell you what I would do. If Will said, tell me how much it is, I'd say, you know what? It's free.
That's not what you said. I should have gave you the amount in shekels.
In Homer.
Yeah. It's an omer of grain and 14 shekels. Figure that out.
Oh, goodness. Well, man, I'm excited for Daniel. And, by the way, if you tuned in through all of this, thanks.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Thank you for showing us grace. It's hard to pastor when we're not supposed to get together. And so we're doing the best we can. Baker, he kind of dropped the ball with the tech issues tonight. But. Yeah. Baker, you're just going to step your game up. But we did the best we could. So thank you for your grace. It's an honor to be with you, church. And so thank you for tuning in. Jeremy, have any final words while I go help Baker turn the live feed off?
Have a great day.